Now, I understand that you've been here since almost the beginning, since the early 1970s. What attracted you to work for Syncrude in the first place?
Thank you for asking that question. I graduated from NAIT in the chemical technology program in 1976, and I had an interview with a chemist that worked at a summer job that I was at that invited me to consider Syncrude. And as I discussed with him the opportunities that this new company, Syncrude, would provide, I realized that it was going to be a fit for me. And that was even before I graduated. They offered me a job at Syncrude. They helped me to understand that we are going to be establishing an environmental lab, and that was a great attraction to me. It was something that I had a great interest in, and so it was a pretty easy decision for me to make.
Now, that's going back quite a number of years, and you had an interest in the environment at that time. Why?
Well, when I went to NAIT, we had various parts of the program, but the environment is important to us because we every day are exposed to it. And if we damage it, we can't undo the damage in some cases. And so I thought this was an opportunity going into Syncrude and working in this environmental lab before our plant started up to establish this environmental baseline, as we called it. It was, to me, a step in the right direction to kind of secure our future as a province, if you will, or at least in that northern community, that we were being responsible as citizens. And in this case, for me, it was as an employee.
What were some of the things you were looking at that time in order to, I guess, either learn more about the environment or protect it in the course of your work?
So when I first started with Syncrude and I began in my work in Mildred Lake, which is where the plant site is, we had an environmental lab set up and we were taking samples in all the waterways there. So there's various creeks, rivers, bodies of water that we needed to take samples of. And so those samples then were submitted for various analyses. And essentially what we're trying to do is what was there before the plant started up? What's the baseline of the various components, the constituents of the water? And then when the plant started up, of course, afterwards we can check again and see what are the changes. And so our responsibility and mine and at that time was to gather these samples, prepare them. Sometimes we had to ship them out to other laboratories to have some analysis done because we weren't quite totally equipped yet. But we did have some lab equipment there we had to set up, we had to commission, and then we did some testing. And that gave us some results of what we were experiencing at that time prior to plant startup. In 1976, when we began, they were still constructing the plant. And so we've gone through many changes in 36 years, as you can well imagine. The road leading up to the plant site from the city, for example, was gravel or dust and dirt in the dry time. And when it was wet, it was mud. And in the winter, it's bitterly cold. So I learned a lot of things in the early days. But even in the winter, we had to sample waterways as well. And they were establishing what was happening during the various seasons. I can remember distinctly a time on the Athabasca River taking a sample near the Mackay area. And we had to go onto the river and we had to use an ice auger to get into this river. And I thought this won't take long. Well, it did take a long time. And that ice, to my surprise, was like 3 or more feet thick. I'd never heard of a river having that kind of a thickness of ice. But nonetheless, I guess the point here is that we were trying to examine the various waterways at that time to establish that environmental baseline and in every season. We also had an active weather station that we were establishing some trends, which direction winds blow, where the temperature ranges are, etc.
Well, over that period of time, there's been a number of changes. Certainly technology has changed, and one would hope that your ability to analyze things has improved mm-hmm. along the way. How would you describe those changes?
So in the early days, you can appreciate some 36 years ago, the technology is somewhat different than now. And so we had certain limitations in that time. But now, with the improvement of technology, we can get lower level detection limits on the various components that we're interested in. If I can use an example, there is an instrument currently in our department that we commissioned about 11, 12 years ago. It's called ICP, inductively coupled plasma. Now, this ICP instrument helps us analyze the metals content of waters. And this piece of equipment was not cheap in the day. It was quite expensive, and it gave us parts per million results of the constituents of the water. And over the years, we've used that, and we were able to analyze many, many samples. But now we want to improve our detection limits. And so we just recently purchased a new instrument that we are I'm going to be involved in commissioning, and we're going to be able to get down to the parts per billion level. And that gives us a huge improvement in detection limits. And then our researchers that are doing the various research programs, providing samples for us to analyze, will then get more information, better information, if I can use that term.
Now, you're involved in a number of different innovations over the years, and one of them, I understand, has to do with naphthenic acids. What can you tell me about naphthenic acids and what you're doing about that?
So, naphthenic acids are a result of us processing oil sand. And as a result of water interaction with the oil sand, it releases this component called naphthenic acids. And they're a component that has an effect on aquatic life. And so what we'd like to know is how much is in the water that we're producing, if it's processed water, or what is in the waterways. We had to find a way to measure it. And a number of years ago in the 90s, there's another technologist and myself who were tasked with finding a way to get a quick and easy analysis for us to provide this information. And so we used an instrument called an FTIR, which is an infrared spectrometer. And we developed a technique, which was quick and easy, in-house here, to determine how much naphthenic acid was in a given water sample. And we developed this in-house, and it's a procedure that, because it's so simple and so easy to do, we were able to provide pretty quick turnaround. Out there in the work world and in various other labs, there are other ways to analyze this, but some of these other techniques can take much more time and more expensive equipment, whereas ours is much more efficient and cheaper to do, actually. And we were able to develop that in-house. I'd like to emphasize that. That's part of the reason why research exists, is to help improve our plant performance. And to support that, we have to develop different procedures and using different equipment to help provide that information.
And how are you getting that out of the water? What are you working on there?
Now, one of the ways to treat the water is doing the Koch filtration, and there's one of our researchers here that developed this technique, and it's similar to a Brita filter idea. Is when you pass water through a Brita filter, it removes some of the components that you don't want to be drinking. And the same thing with this Koch technique is we pass processed water through it, and it absorbs the naphthenic acid, removing it from the processed water so that in the end, there is no naphthenic acid present. And so in the work that this researcher was doing, it was important to know what did we begin with when we did this special process to remove the naphthenic acid, what did we end up with? And we're actively doing that even today, providing this information for this new process. And in our research department, we actually like to boast on our fish tank that we have in our atrium area. There's a fish tank there that has three happy fish that have been there for many, many, many months, and or probably a couple of years now. I'm not sure how long we've had it, probably a couple of years. And in that water is the processed water that's been treated. It's not clean water that's come from a tap, but it's actually processed water treated with this Koch.
One of the other things that you've been involved in that's been very, very important in terms of innovation is how you actually move that mined material from the mine into the plant.
Yes.
I understand that's called hydrotransport. Mm-hmm. Tell me about that.
Certainly. In the early days, when we began the plant, the technology at the time was to use drag lines and bucket wheel reclaimers to mine the oil sand, and then we put that oil sand on a conveyor belt system to the plant. And I've been involved in research from the beginning, as you can imagine, and we found that the conveyor belts were failing miserably in the winter. And so we had to work with various vendors to improve the conveyor belt performance. But the problem with conveyor belts is they have a limited amount of distance that you can use for transportation of that oil sand. So one of the things we did at research, and I was involved in the early stages with a piece of equipment that was kind of the beginning of the hydrotransport, where we wanted to investigate if we could actually send down a pipeline in a slurried form oil sand instead of conveying it by conveyor. And we tested that at research in probably, oh my goodness, it was prior to 94. It was in the late 80s, perhaps. I'd have to check on the date. But we started to investigate that we could actually transport oil sand in a slurry mixed with water down a pipeline. And we'd use pumps to pump it. And the advantage there was we could pump it great distances. And then distance was no longer a limiting factor, whereas the conveyor belts were. The other advantage was we could go lower temperature. And that was a great innovation. On the environment, we're definitely being environmentally responsible by not using as much much energy, not having to heat it, the slurry as much anymore. But we also were able to get the advantage of not having to spend a lot of money on conveyors that had to be replaced continually. And pipelining now allows us to go kilometers and kilometers. We don't have that restriction of distance anymore.
But I would think just even getting to that point, you would have a number of obstacles to overcome, especially working in the north where there's a lot of extreme temperatures and mm-hmm. other stressors that you have to deal with. Mm-hmm. What would be some of the things that you had to overcome?
I'm a technologist. I'm one team member amongst many, and there were many, many people involved in this, engineers and people that designed this equipment. They had to evaluate pumps, and they had to determine what the density of this material had to be so that it wouldn't sand out in the pipe, or how fast it had to be pumped so that it wouldn't freeze, for example, in the pipes. And so these are some questions that I personally didn't answer. It was more the engineers. But over time, as we worked through these issues, we were able to determine that, yes, during cold weather, we can absolutely for sure pump this slurry down the pipeline, and it would not cause us problems. We just had to determine what the best conditions were, what the operating parameters would be best suited for that kind of operation.
So when you look back over your career so far, what would you consider your crowning glory?
Wow, what a question. That is a very good question. I probably have a couple of highlights in my career. Because the hydro transport was such a success story, that was one of my greatest pleasures at Syncrude, is to see that technology develop. Because I was right from the beginning when the conveyors were failing, and we had a huge issue around that. And then to be part of the problem solving, again, I'm just one of many people that were involved. But I had the pleasure of being involved, and that was a real privilege for me. So that was a highlight to see hydro transport birthed and now in use commonly, not only in our company, but in many other oil sands operations. And perhaps another thing that I really appreciate and I have as a highlight in my career is the opportunity that I've been given to work with new equipment, commission that equipment so it can help our overall lab analysis effort. And for me, as a chemical technologist, it's been a dream job to be able to be involved in laboratory work with new equipment, to be able to commission that so the end result is a better result for our company, has been a really, really a great pleasure. So hydro transport and the opportunity for commissioning new equipment for our benefit.
So looking forward, what do you see as being areas that still need some work that you might be involved in?
Well, I'm getting late in my career. I don't know how many years I have left. As you can appreciate, since 1976, I have 36 years, and you could probably do the math if I graduated from Nate, and I'm now here and in this year of 2012. But I guess one of the areas of focus that I will likely be involved with is the tailings issue, and how are we going to take care of the tailings remediation, and how are we going to ensure that we can, for future generations, have the tailings ponds environmentally dealt with so that in the end, we don't have tailings ponds anymore. So I guess I'll be involved a little while yet for my career on the whole tailings pond issue, I think would be the next challenge.
Because of your long association here in the research department, in many ways, you are a pioneer in a lot of the techniques that have come along. How do you feel being a pioneer, and what are you doing with that?
I guess I look at the new staff coming on right now, and I was new once too. And somebody took me under the wing, as it were, when I was new, and began to show me the various aspects of work at research. And I appreciated that so much. And I feel like I'm a valued member of this overall team. Now, fast forward 36 years, I have the pleasure of working with new employees. So though I was a pioneer earlier, I can use some of my experience from those past years to help pass that on to some of the new employees. So now that new staff that come in that I have the pleasure of mentoring, that's one of my joys, is to mentor new staff and to help them understand context of where Syncrude was, how far it's come and where it might be going. And that's a great opportunity for me. So if you call me a pioneer, yeah, I suppose, but there's lots of long-term service people here at Syncrude. But what I just take such great joy in is taking these new staff members and input into their lives like I had input into my life when I was early in my career.
You started off with a focus on the environment. Do you still feel that way?
Yes, absolutely. I've said this before, I've commented before. I have grandchildren, and I would like nothing more than my grandchildren, or perhaps their children, so my great-grandchildren, to go to the Fort McMurray Mildred Lake plant site someday and walk through the forest there, or walk through the trees, or go by the lakeside and say, wow, look at this. Isn't this wonderful? Look at the trees. Look at the birds. Whatever they might see there, that once was an oil sands plant, but it's not an oil sands plant anymore. All the land has been reclaimed and is in a state that was like it was before it actually had a plant on it and had all the mining operation on it. So for me, the joy would be my great-grandchildren perhaps, maybe my grandchildren's a little bit soon, but maybe their children, for them to walk through there and see, wow, where's the plant? I don't see a plant here. My great-grandfather worked here. Wow, I don't see anything but beautiful forests.
Thank you very much, Richard.
You're very welcome. My pleasure.